WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The cry, "I'm Spartacus," will soon ring out again in movie theaters around the country. The 1960 Roman epic has been restored. Audiences will see several minutes of footage that was originally censored because of sexual references or violence that was too graphic for the time. Spartacus is one of the biggest of the big historical spectacles, with big stars, Kirk Douglas, Tony Curtis, Charles Laughton, Laurence Olivier, a cast of thousands, 5,000 uniforms and 7 tons of custom-made armor were needed for the battle scenes, and an epic running time, about 3 hours. Kirk Douglas starred as the leader of a slave rebellion in ancient Rome. Olivier was the head of the Roman army. My guest, Tony Curtis, played Olivier's sensitive slave boy who joins the uprising and becomes like a son to Spartacus. In this scene, Curtis is attending to Olivier in the bath. Curtis gives his master a robe, then Olivier talks about the glory of Rome.
"There, boy, is Rome. The might, the majesty, the terror of Rome. There is the power that bestrides the known world like a colossus. No man can withstand Rome. No nation can withstand her. How much less a boy?" "There's only one way to deal with Rome, Antoninus. You must serve her. You must abase yourself before her. You must grovel at her feet. You must love her." "Isn't that so, Antoninus?"
Well, you get the point there. Olivier is suggesting that Curtis should not only give in to the power of Rome, but to the sexual power of his master. The censors cut the first part of that scene because the homosexual overtones were too explicit for them. But that scene is restored in the new version.
The scene has Larry, Olivier, and I in a tub. And I'm his slave and I'm washing him. And he tries to convince me to have probably a homosexual relationship with him. And after the proposition, I disappear and join Spartacus' forces. So that is, in essence, what that scene is about.
Yes, except it's very metaphoric. The whole thing is so...
Well, he doesn't come out and say, "I want to stick it to you, dear." I mean, you know, he talks about snails and oysters. It's a clever way of... Or they think it's an artistic way of doing it. I would have much preferred the scene were a little more blatant in its approach, because it would have been a lot more logical and perhaps a lot more realistic. But somebody thought it would be kind of fanciful to talk of fish. I really don't know why.
Well, I actually have the script from that scene in front of me, so let me read some of it. I won't pretend like I'm you or Olivier.
Well, please.
But Crassus, played by Olivier, asks you a bunch of questions. He asks you, "Do you steal, Antoninus?" And you say, "No, master." And he says, "Do you lie?" And you say, "No, master." And he says, "Have you ever dishonored the gods?" And you say, "No." He says, do you refrain from these vices out of respect for the moral virtues?" And you say, "Yes." Then he asks you if you eat oysters and if you eat snails. And you say that you eat oysters, but you don't eat snails. And he asks you if you consider the eating of oysters to be moral and the eating of snails to be immoral, and so on. And then he confesses that he eats both.
Yes.
It's kind of like swinging both ways type subtext here. So did you and Olivier really talk through the scene before you did it? You
know, absolutely not. There's nothing to talk through. There I am in a bikini.
Yeah, you're wearing your bathing trunks.
Standing over him while he sits in a bikini in a tub. I mean, it doesn't really take a lot of internal dialogue to describe or even know what's going on. You know?
There's something very campy about the scene. Was that intentional?
There's nothing campy about it at all. You know, it's very blatant and very convincing in that sense. You know, it's these two men who are diametrically opposed. One is a slave and the other is the general of the Roman forces. And you see in both their demeanor and their body language of what they survey and what they own. And it's that language that speaks much more eloquently than the oysters and the snails. You see Antoninus very hesitant about touching this general. One wrong move one way or the other, and he knows he's dead. He has to be very, very delicate and very sensitive to this general's moods, feelings, and ideas. The way he answers those questions, he thinks them out carefully before he says them, because he doesn't know if one of those questions is going to cost him his life, or even his virginity, or whatever it is he's trying to protect. So this is all in that scene, you know? It's all implicit in all of that. And that's what's going on, you know? There's nothing campy about it. It's a lot more revealing and a lot more introspective than it would seem.
Was there a big fight with the censors over the scene?
No, there wasn't. I don't think the studio had any plans to really put it in, you know?
Well, whose idea was it to put it in?
Well, it had to go in. Larry Olivier and I wouldn't have done the other scenes had not that scene been shot. See, it was written in the script, and before the picture was made, they decided that it's not going to end up in the movie. So we shot that scene, but only on the protest. Larry and I told the production department and the producer of the film that we would not be interested in doing the second scene unless we had that first scene. And we wouldn't do that first scene unless we had the scene before it where he sees me in a lineup and says to me, "Your name? You will attend to me." All of those were implicit in this kind of string of the relationship between Crassus and Antoninus. That's what you call complete movie making. It was very important. And for them to cut that scene out hurt that whole center of the film, and I feel it hurt the movie completely, because it kind of, you know, washed it down to nothing. So you weren't quite sure what that meant.
So did either of you take the lead in objecting to the scene being cut, or in insisting that
no, we both knew what the relationship between Crassus and Antoninus was, and we both insisted that the scenes had to be done the way the script was written. So we got them to shoot that scene, but they never recorded the sound. You know, they discarded the sound because they knew that it would probably never be in the film. Larry and I hoped it would be, and when we saw the final cut and realized they had cut it, we knew that, you know, it was hurting the performances, but there was nothing we could do about it. And here we are 30-some-odd years later, and it's back in the movie, and I'm sure if Larry were alive, he'd really be happy to know that.
Now, the scene that we're talking about had no sound. So that means that you had to dub in the sound when they decided to restore it.
Yes.
And Olivier is no longer with us. How did you...
Well, I did Olivier, and they got somebody else to do me.
Right.
They got Anthony Hopkins to do Olivier.
Uh-huh. But you, even for you doing yourself, I mean, it wasn't anybody standing in for you, but still a voice changes in...
Well, all you do is kick it up a little bit higher.
Is that what you did?
Well, that's what I did. I'm doing it now.
Does it sound convincing?
It's convincing to me.
Tony Curtis is my guest, and you can see him now in the restored version of Spartacus. Now, Kirk Douglas, in his memoirs, says that you approached him for a part in Spartacus.
Not true.
Okay.
No, he came to me.
What he says is that you approached him for a part, and he initially turned you down, and then he decided to rewrite the part for you.
No, not true at all. I was under contract to Universal. Kirk Douglas and the company was doing everything they can to cut costs and didn't want to pay anybody extra salary, so they went to Universal and said, could they use one of my commitments for the price that they were paying me? And Universal agreed and said, if Tony wants to do it, he can. I read the script and I said, okay, and that's how we did it.
Did you like the script?
I liked my part. I couldn't tell too much about the script. You know, it's very difficult to take one-dimensional pages with the words and try to visualize it into a movie. So much happens in that change and transition. you read in a script, man drives up in car, gets out of car, goes in front door, locks door. Well, what kind of a car? What street? What kind of a man? What kind of a door? Is it a big house or small house? See, all of those details have to be filled in by somebody, either by the director or the production department that says, well, we don't want to spend $500 for the street, so shoot it on the back lot for $122. So all of these are very important elements in putting together a film. Spartacus was the same way. It was very difficult to read. I mean, you read it, but you had no way of knowing what the visual look of the film would be. And it wasn't until Stanley Kubrick was connected to the project that I really feel hopeful that the picture would be a unique and interesting one. He was a young man like myself.
He was 31. How old were you?
I was 33, I think. No. Well, what year was the picture made? Do you know?
I think it was 61, but I can't really remember.
I was born in 25, 35, 45, 55, 60. Yeah, I was about 31, 32 years old. And, you know, everybody else were old men. You know, the director, not the director, but the production department, the writers, the producers of the film. You know, and old men have a peculiar attitude toward young people, old men and women. You know, don't tell us how to do it. We've done it all our lives, you know. And so that was the pressure that we felt. And then on top of that, you felt the studio pressure. So when Stanley got to do the movie, I was so pleased because at last I had a contemporary that I felt I could relate to. And it was true. He was a interesting and very persevering director.
In what ways had you felt misunderstood before by older people who had directed you or produced you in movies?
Well, I just didn't like the way they made movies. I thought they made concessions that were somewhat unnecessary. I didn't like the way they directed films. They were very envious of me and anybody that was young. They are today. People are always envious of younger people. And all of these elements seem to get into that element of making movies. And so it was really difficult. I chose always to work with younger men. I worked with Blake Edwards. I gave him his first film. He was a couple of years older than I. Dick Quine, Robin Mulligan, Norman Jewison. I always reached for the younger director as opposed to an older gentleman who... There were some men who were so gifted that they their age did not inflict itself on the younger people, a man like Billy Wilder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But most of them were really disgruntled, unhappy, very frustrated people. And this is what happens when you get into a movie. You know, these are the people that you have to work with. And, you know, you're young and you don't want to offend anybody, so you do what you're told.
My guest is Tony Curtis. He co-stars in the movie Spartacus, which has just been restored. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Tony Curtis is my guest, if you're just joining us. Did you need any special training for this Roman epic?
Nothing more than doing push-ups.
Did you have to make those muscles bulge just
a
little bit
more? Yeah, right. In fact, when the picture started, Larry came up to me and said, Tony, where do I get arms like that? I said, come with me, sir. And I took him behind the stage. I said, get down on the floor, which he did. I said, now do like I do, push up. So I gave him a series of push-ups to do. We do them every morning together. That's one of the fondest memories I have on that picture, Larry and I doing our push-ups in the morning.
Do you remember any of the logistical problems in the big battle scene?
Yes, there was a scene that was shot in Death Valley, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember now the exact location, where down in the valley were thousands of soldiers and men lined up, and the camera panned up and came up a hill. And as it came up a hill, it disclosed, I think, Spartacus on a horse. And just as that camera came there, the horse bolted and took Kirk off in a big steam of sand and dirt, and was never seen again in that shot. So we had to go do it again. It was a complicated scene, and that horse just would not, you know, pay attention to it. Because after all of the action, the camera would slowly pan and disclose that horse. So it had those kind of problems, you know. Charlie McGraw, an actor who was doing a scene with Kirk Douglas, and he was the, what would you call it, the guy that ran the gladiator school. he and Spartacus, when they revolt, how to fight. And in the struggle, Kirk pushed his head, Charles McGraw's head, onto the edge of the barrel and split his eye open. You can see it in the movie, just blood gushing out. So that held up for shooting for a long time.
Oh, you mean he really hurt him accidentally?
Yes. So there were always accidents like that. I had hurt my tendon on the film, and at one point I just couldn't walk, so they gave me a cast, and I tried to, you know, maneuver through that, which worked all right. Let's see what else. There were a number of these things, a lot of horses falling down with people on it, people getting broken arms. But, you know, that's the nature of the profession, and we were all kind of prepared for it. We rather like the adventure of it and the danger of it, you know, it all adds to the making of a movie.
The way Spartacus was cast, all the Romans were played by British actors.
Yes.
And all the slaves were played by
Americans.
Not only Americans, a lot of ethnic Americans were in there, too.
Yes.
What was the rationale for that?
I think they did it, in retrospect, you see, I feel it was probably done with an intent that aristocratic clipped English sound was in a way itself masterful, that that kind of language looked down on anybody else and everybody else. And by casting most of all the slaves with Americans, you saw that very distinct difference between the two. And I think that helped in some of the scenes, you know?
It probably played on American stereotypes, too, of, you know, the British being... Because the comparison was made between the British and the Romans, you know.
Yes.
More high culture.
But that's been going on for a long time in films, you know.
Right.
Every time you needed someone who seemed to have a higher elevation of intelligence, they always seemed to cast Englishmen or that kind of a clipped sound, you know.
Mm-hmm. You've been in several other period movies and period epics, including Terrace Bulba. How did you like doing period movies? Did you have mixed feelings about some of them?
No, I didn't. I love every movie I ever made. I've done every conceivable kind of movie. I've played a woman. I've played doctors, lawyers. I've played a child in a movie. I've been football players. I've been pilots. I've been in the Army, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. So I've played a great number of different kind of parts and people. So I love them all.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot.
Actor Tony Curtis. The restored version of Spartacus premieres in New York on Sunday and opens nationally April 27th.
Slaves you were, and slaves you remain. But the terrible penalty of crucifixion has been set aside on the single condition that you identify the body or the living person of the slave called Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.